Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothman, the Daily Beast, half full editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Wongdrich. How are you, Dave?
I'm good. How are you?
Feeling pretty good today. Excited to talk about this topic that has generated a fair amount of buzz.
A little bit of back and forth, for sure.
Recently, you wrote a piece for Half Full about the evolution of the menu, starting kind of like where it came from and for cocktail menus, of course, and sort of how it's gone right and also how it's kind of gone wrong recently.
There is a little bit of gone wrong there, which
and it was one. It was one that, you know, usually with your stories, you know, it's not that hard to come up with like a interesting title for them. You know, they usually kind of present themselves. You know, it's, you know, whatever it is, it's you know, it's not that hard. But this one, I was really struggling. That's one of those things where I was like, you know, the piece was pretty much done. And I kept thinking and I kept thinking, and I didn't want to put something like too like incendiary, because your piece was alarming, but it wasn't, you know, it was fairly kind of balanced. So I didn't want to like,
you know, it's never horrible right. with these things. Like, every right. once in a while it is, right. but rarely. When you're coming to cocktails, you know, there's always two sides to the question when you've got complaints about things.
Right. And I think we did a good job with the title, which I think we went with something like, "Help, I don't know any of the cocktails on yeah. these menus."
Well, that's
like, you know, and I think that's the issue. I mean, like, that's where the kind of
– that was the genesis of the piece is, you know, I live in New York City, where we have lots of cocktail bars, and also where restaurants down to the neighborhood level are expected to have cocktail lists oh, yeah. now. So you go in and you look at the menu, and, you know, I've been covering this field of human endeavor for 20 years yeah. and drinking in restaurants and bars for a lot longer than that.
Oh, yeah.
And I sit down and they put the menu in front of me and I look at it and I just blink. It's like, I don't understand what half of these ingredients are.
Right.
I don't understand the combinations that they're being that they're being used in. And it seems like the main priority in a lot of bars and restaurants is to make something new.
Yeah.
And that's okay. For some people, they want that all the time.
Right.
Other people – and, you know, I got some response from drinkers who saying, well, I actually like that. That's fine. Other people want it sometimes.
Right.
And, you know, you go to a special bar for that. But a lot of these places, especially restaurant bars, you sit down, you know, you want a nice cocktail before your dinner. You're not going sure. there for a blue sky mixology.
Right. The point that you made in the story is that it's not that you don't want creativity. No, that's not the point. The point is you need like a mix of classics, right? And then you need new ones, because you and I both, I mean, I've been to bars or restaurants and – you know, people look at the cocktail menu mm-hmm. and then they look at us and yeah. they're like, dummy.
What do I order?
Dummy, yeah. you, this is your thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So what does this yeah. taste like? I'm like, what is that ingredient? I'm like, how do I know what the hell that yeah. thing? So then, I mean, at least I'm confident enough to say to the server or the bartender, hey, what is this, you know?
Yeah, but a lot of people don't want to do that because no. they think it makes them look dumb.
And
when it's really the establishment that is being dumb about this.
Well, right. And then, you know, and the problem is that if most of them things are known, right? Maybe
yeah.
you have a martini or an old fashioned mm-hmm. or whatever it is, a daiquiri. Then maybe you try one of the three new ones. And as you pointed out, that then allows those new drinks to catch on. It's like a forest, right? You need the you can't overplant too many trees. There can only be so many trees that grow.
Well, I mean, I talk in the article about how cocktail menus used to work.
Right.
And this, you know, it goes – the cocktail menus are old. They go back to the 1840s. And sort of the golden age of them was starting around the 1890s up through the 1960s. And there were new drinks that came in during that period, but – the bulk of those menus sort of covered the same drinks.
Basically, one guy created a menu.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the country and even the world basically just – It was like, oh, this is great. Thanks for doing it, guy. Like, awesome. And we're just going to use this for decades and like with almost no changes.
Yeah, and eventually
– amazing.
Yeah, eventually that one – that was like the menu A.
Right.
Then there was menu B that came in around 1890.
Right.
And menu B was the one that really – that lasted till the 60s. Well, and menu B was really interesting because it has most of the famous cocktails we know on it. And if you went to a bar, you'd see like 8 out of 10 of their drinks would be – from that list, which everybody knew and understood. Oh, a whiskey sour. I like a whiskey sour.
And it's kind of like when you go to Rome, all the restaurants literally serve the same menu.
Exactly.
But the food tastes differently because the chefs know, you know, it's slightly.
Oh, I mean, I was in Sicily a couple of years ago in the summer, and one of my favorite things in the world is granita di caffè campana, which is a coffee granita, you know, like coffee, like frozen into slush with whipped cream on top.
Ooh.
And it's delicious.
Sounds
good. But every place I went made it differently.
Right.
It was the same ingredients. It was the same thing, but they all had their ways of prioritizing this and that. And just because you have a common list doesn't mean you have to make things – it's not the Stepford Wives, as I say.
Right.
You know, you don't have to make things – exactly the same as everybody else.
Although the extreme of that is also dangerous, as we've seen.
Yeah.
It reminds me kind of like the late 90s, early 2000s, where you'd go into a bar.
Right.
And they'd hand you a quote-unquote martini list. Right.
Right. And
none of the drinks had vermouth or gin. Or even vodka. I mean, it was vodka with like chocolate sauce and like, you know, whipped cream and all this crazy stuff. And the extreme of that is that, you know, if you're going to have classics, they should, you know, there's obviously an acceptable range to put your own twist on it, right? Your own, you know.
I mean, I want, like, if it's a Manhattan, I want American whiskey with vermouth and bitters. And, you know, okay, you put maybe a little dash of this or that, or.
Or you think, you know,
it's,
you think an ounce and three quarters versus an ounce and a half of this whiskey with that vermouth. That's great. That's where the skill comes in.
I mean, that's how the Sicilians did did these granitas. You know, they used the same ingredients.
Right.
They just, their technique was a little different. The way they built it was a little different for each.
But the problem is.
But it was the same thing.
Where, you know, we've gone, and you wrote another story about this a couple of years ago for us. I think it was called One is a Martini, Not a Martini.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like when you go in, and I remember this with my friend, you know, we were at a bar, I won't name it, in New York, and they ordered a Dark and Stormy, which is, I mean,
fairly simple drink.
Right. I mean, rum, fresh lime juice, ginger beer, ginger ale, you know, depending on what it is, bitters, you know,
that's acceptable.
Nobody, I mean, it's a wonderful drink, anybody can make it. And it tastes great.
Very simple.
And what came, I have no idea what this was. And, you know, part of it was that they didn't have like ginger beer or ginger ale because it's like a ginger syrup with like soda. And sometimes that's not bad too. I mean, like, you know, like an old timey.
In the hands of people who are really experts at that.
I mean, you know, you go to an old timey soda jerk and ginger syrup and soda. That's how you make soda. But it was weird. It was brown. It was flat. It was, and it didn't. And the worst part about it is like, okay, it's maybe not what I wanted. Maybe it's the wrong name for it, but at least it's got to taste good.
Yeah.
It's good.
I get so many strange combinations in cocktails, you know?
Right.
And you taste it and you go, what were they going for here? And, and the funny thing for me is, eventually, you taste new cocktail after new cocktail, and they all kind of taste like new cocktail. You know, they all kind of taste the same in a weird way, even though their ingredients are completely different.
Yeah.
They have this little flavor profile where it's a little bit bitter, it's a little bit sour, it's a little bit strong, it's a little bit, you know.
And then sometimes
salty.
Whatever the flavor of the month is, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, everybody is.
That rides over the top.
Right. But everybody is using. using, you know, cast strength rye, or this one everybody's using Fernet Branc. Everybody's X, Y, and, or, you know, back in the day, Saint Germain, certainly. Yeah. And they really do taste so similar because it's,
you know, the same ingredients.
And some of them have such big flavors that it's hard to.
And see, that's what the old, you know, consensus cocktail list, which, like I said, like we said, was never fixed.
Right.
It was – there was always room at the edges for new drinks. The margarita came in and was accepted.
Absolutely.
The sidecar came in and was accepted.
Right.
A few other things dropped out over the years. You didn't see egg flips and things like that.
Or even the pina colada, whatever.
There was room for those, but
– and room for things that were not serious or, you know, you know, that were silly but tasted good.
But they were always at the edges of the list.
Right.
You'd always have, you know, the Manhattans, the Old Fashions, the Whiskey Sours, the Jack Rose,
well,
a number of other cocktails that everybody knew.
And as you wrote, like in the story, which I thought was one of the most powerful lines, was that just like a restaurant, any profitable, successful restaurant will always have a salmon dish, a hamburger, a roast chicken, a bar or a restaurant for the cocktails also needs that kind of like safe.
Yep.
And, you know, the choice where you always know it's going to taste fairly similar and be enjoyable.
That's the problem is you see those on the menu even.
Right.
It says Manhattan. It says daiquiri. But then you look at it really closely they've pulled a fast one on you because they're using the name and they've replaced every ingredient.
It's Manhattan with one T.
I mean, so it's I said I made up like Falls of the Gowanus, you know, seaweed infused Falls of the Gowanus oat whiskey or something.
Yeah,
something you've never heard of in your Manhattan that's not what should be in a Manhattan.
We've talked about this before on Life Behind Bars. I often, you know, go, you know, we'll try one new drink.
Right.
And then I'll have an old favorite. Yeah. You know, that's how I do. And that's, you know, maybe the third drink if we stay long enough. Maybe it's another new drink or maybe it's another classic. And I think a lot of people drink that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you want to taste something new. Sometimes you want it again.
Sometimes you don't.
Which I think also why sometimes, especially with the new ones, it's nice when they offer like a half pour, you know, where it's
A little like, taste. I mean, otherwise it's a $15 investment in you don't know what.
Right.
You know?
And the problem is like it may be the best thing I've ever had or maybe, you know, something I don't ever want to drink. And as the world has gotten ever smaller, there are ingredients showing up. And I was editing a recipe, I think yesterday, and my colleague was like, what is kombu?
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, let me look this up again. I was like, you know, this is a crazy recipe, like kombu in like a saltwater solution, right? And I was like,
okay.
I mean, I had the drink though. The drink was delicious. Like, it was a Ryan Fitzgerald, absolutely delicious drink with toasted sesame oil.
Okay.
Again, but I had had the drink first. Right?
That helps. Yeah.
And I also didn't have to pay for it. But it also helps. But I had had the drink first and was like, you know what? That's totally worth the experience of finding these ingredients or trying.
But I mean, the problem is you sit down with a cocktail menu these days, and every drink on it is like that, and you don't know where to start.
Right.
They all get lost, you know. If you had the old style menu where there's 10 classics and four of these or three of those, then you're going to focus on that drink and it will have a chance to get noticed.
And I have to say that's also where old school hospitality kicks in, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, you could have the most, you know, cutting edge, outlandish menu, right? But I think the more cutting edge it is, the more you have to invest in hospitality. So
you can't just be there, hey, these are our drinks, bitches.
Right.
Take them and suck them down.
Right. Drop the menu and run, right?
Yeah, which I see all too often, unfortunately.
But you also have to invest in education, right? And like in the bartenders, the server. Everybody tastes the dishes, right? I mean, all the servers do, right? All the waiters, like – so that they can talk about it, right? I mean, at least in the best restaurants, right? Before they have a special.
I mean, you know, at least some modern cocktail bars do that and spend a lot of time on that. But especially, you know, restaurant bars, they don't have the staff to do that. It's a restaurant bar, you know?
And that's when somebody's like, oh, what does that taste like? Oh, like, you know.
I don't know. The
like,
consultant did it, you know?
Right. Or I don't know. I don't really drink gin, so I don't have that one. Okay. Any help here? At a bar where they have invested in training and education, and the bartender say, okay, like tastes like this.
You got to be really friendly about it, though.
Right.
You know,
I think it's hard on both sides of the bar.
It is.
Know?
Also, what they'll tell you when you complain that, you know, the menu is really weird, they say, well, you know, we'll make all the other drinks. You just have to ask.
Right.
But that puts a lot of burden on the customer of like, I don't know what I want, you know?
Right. And then also, and as you pointed out, sometimes that – kind of makes people feel weird, like, you know, that people suddenly think, like, why do you know so much about cotton
mouth? Yeah, who are you? Especially, you know, in restaurants, you're with all kinds of people.
Who knows, right?
Yeah, and it's like, oh, you're suddenly a cocktail expert. You know, what's your problem here?
Right, or you order for everybody now.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. I don't want to order for everybody. I mean, I also feel for bartenders who spend the whole night, like, you know, oh, what's this? You know, it's like, I don't like that. Like, oh, I don't want that in my drink. It's like, well, if you just, it's like a dash. Like, don't, you know, I don't.
Well, they don't tell you that either. Right. You know, it's like, so you don't know how much.
Right. But I mean, but even like the better butler.
How much hedge muckle thorn they're putting in there or whatever the hell it is that you don't know.
The more complicated the drinks, the more questions you're going to get and the more time you're going to have to spend trying to explain to people.
Also making the drinks, too.
I mean, it's more making all the sub recipes and all the infusions and the syrups. And
I mean, bartenders often in craft cocktail bars, they got to come in an hour, 2 hours before their shift.
I mean, at least.
Yeah,
I mean,
to do stuff. And imagine if they used that time for, like, having a book club or something for, you know? I mean, just – or like, conversation time.
Well, I love that. Leave it to two book authors of cocktail books.
Yeah, exactly.
Books. They're like, maybe bartenders should spend their time buying
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
But you know what bartenders used to spend a lot of time on is reading the newspaper you know, getting topics of conversation.
That's true.
I mean, so that's what I'm saying. If they didn't have to make so many goddamn syrups, you know, some bartenders
they could take our sports bets again. No.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm not kidding though. Bars spend so much energy on their cocktail lists, and in the past they used to spend a lot less energy on that and much more on hospitality and jokes.
Right.
And,
I mean, it was the post office, it was the sports book, it was the bank, it was the
comedy club,
the shrink. I mean, it was everything.
Yeah, it was everything.
You know, everything you needed was at the bar.
Yeah. I mean, that made bars very fun.
Yes. Well, and essential. I mean, that's, and it kept people coming back. Point is that we all want, both of us want bars to succeed. I mean, selfishly, because we love and cocktails.
I want new cocktails. I want delicious new cocktails to have a chance to succeed also.
Right.
Instead of getting drowned out by all the others that are dragging them down.
And we want bars to be profitable and for people to want to go out. That aspect was sometimes gotten lost, that at the end of the day, we also want people to come back and have a good time. And then maybe on their second visit, they will try the new cocktail or on that second drink, you know.
Exactly. A cocktail list is just a tool for engaging customers. Some of these are just not very engaging. They're aiming at a small subset of their customers who get everything they want, and everybody else gets nothing that they want.
Right.
And I think it's better to sort of find a middle there, you know, or find a way of making people happier.
Yeah, and bartenders are sort of on the cutting edge of trends, you know, and tastes and stuff, and often flavor ingredients that are popular with bartenders or either to drink on their own or to be featured in drinks, you know, by the time the rest of the world gets on board, you know, they've moved on to something else, right? I mean, they've, you know, they don't want to drink what the patrons are drinking.
Oh, rye, that's so last year, you know. Now we're drinking, you know, Mexican rum or whatever.
Whatever it is. I mean, fair enough. Look, that is, you know.
Well, it's kind of awesome, but
we all
still
do that. But at the same time, I think you've got to realize that, you know, while the rest of the folks are, you know, now getting into whatever it is, Amaro, rye whiskey, you know, mezcal, that like you still gotta do it. Like, you know, you created this, so like you
gotta support it.
You gotta support it. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. So like you should be proud of this whole this whole trend that you gave birth to, but you know, now you're already on to the next thing, you know. And that's why I was so concerned about your story is not trying to paint you as, you know, some kind of curmudgeon screaming at kids to get off your lawn. It's not about that.
Kids are welcome on the lawn. They just can't take up all of it.
Right. exactly.
You know, I'm happy to give them, you know, here, pitch your tent here. Right, and, you know, exactly. If you want to put your barbecue there, that's
right,
good too.
Right.
But, you know, leave some for the rest of us.
Don't burn down my house.
Yeah, don't burn down my house. Exactly. And you know, just behave. Right. You know, you're perfectly welcome.
Right.
But, it's not, yeah, I don't think, you know, we're opposed to innovation per se. It's just when innovation becomes the number one thing on a cocktail list, because there are other constituencies there that need to be recognized and that you'll find very good for your business.
Yeah, I agree. That's what also makes it interesting for us. I mean, if everybody literally served the same five drinks, it would be a lot simpler and boring to write about drinks. And,
it would be.
And
although, you know, I mean, there are people who write about barbecue and how many different kinds of barbecue.
That's true.
It's all about the execution and making them with love, choosing the ingredients carefully.
The box, you know, of creativity, you know, the rules for, you know, scotch or some of these other drinks is so tight, but yet distillers find a way to innovate.
And, exactly.
You know, they use the same barley, the same, literally, I mean, same strain, same malters, same, you know, yeast strains or whatever it is. Stills are built by the same people. Mm-hmm. I mean, fairly similar
and
size.
And then you get like the Glenlivet and Talisker, which are so different.
Right. And it's all about the small changes. Yeah. It's all about all the small variables.
And I just think that kind of subtlety is worth investing in and paying attention to and finding satisfaction in.
Yeah.
You know, so if I go to the bar and I see they've got a Jack Rose and I see they make it just really beautifully, I'm going to think so much more highly of that bar.
Right.
You know, it's not just, oh, here's a Jack Rose because you ordered it, old person. It's like, oh, yeah, Jack Rose is a lovely drink. We love making them here.
Right.
We make a great one and we think the best one in the city, you know, and you taste that and you go, yes, you do, and I'll be back.
And then maybe it's like, maybe try my version with, you know, Mexican bourbon afterwards.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, what else do you do well?
Right.
You know, I think they've kind of got it backwards. It's like, here's our weirdest, we're going to present our weirdest to you, and then, you know, we'll make you a daiquiri.
Right.
You know, but.
It's like, let's show off, like, trust us.
Yeah.
Kind of a leap of faith on both sides.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
And sometimes that works. Some bars people go to just for that, but a lot of people don't go to bars for weird mixology.
And, I mean, I think we've seen that with restaurants where the whole molecular craze was the most cutting edge, you know, kind of type of cuisine. And
never filled a lot of seats, though.
No, and most of those, unfortunately for the people who started them, most of those restaurants did not succeed. And I think people would go once or twice.
Right.
And they wanted to experience it as an experience, but it wasn't a type of food that they wanted all the time.
Yeah.
And I think what we've seen with the molecular stuff is that it's sort of become part of more standard traditional cooking, where sous vide machines are now incorporated into cooking all types of traditional dishes without making everything into a sphere or a cube or, you know.
I mean, I was fortunate enough to have dinner not too long ago at one of the hottest restaurants in New York, Franchette.
Oh, yeah.
Which is mostly traditional, you know?
And
boy, is that a tough place to get into.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody loves that restaurant because it's hospitable.
Right.
The food is great and it's very simple, you know, with occasional modern touches, like you said, you know, they tuck those in.
Yeah.
They don't lead with them.
Right.
And you know, they had a cocktail list which had some pretty simple drinks on it.
Right.
I was able to have a simple daiquiri, but made with Haitian rum with Clairin.
Right.
Was the difference. And that was their little spin, but it's still rum, lime juice, and sugar. You know, there's really not much else you need.
At the beginning of the rebirth of the cocktail, we saw people like Sasha Pastrzowski at you know, Milk and Honey and all of his bars, and it was all classics all the time, right? And they were made, you know, to his specifications, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then, but at the same time, they had Dealer's Choice, right? Which was interesting too. But again, the Dealer's Choice was classics, but they
were with little spins on them,
and that
nobody objects to that,
right? And that almost seemed kind of like it was almost like they could play both sides of the field. Like
we do
classics. But if you want something bespoke or modern, we'll like create something together.
Yeah, but it's not going to be weird modern.
Right. Well, right. I mean,
because that was Sasha's bars, right, but right. but other people have taken that. Yeah.
Right, and I think the where that kind of, you know, leads to is now you see some of, you know, the alums were of the Milk and Honey system, like mm-hmm. Sam Ross, who, you know, did a big cocktail program in Vegas at the Venetian or at their sister property, and you know, he has, you know, his famous for his penicillin cocktail, right? Which is, I guess, like a rinse of smoky scotch plus, you know, whiskey and
ginger.
They've turned it into the penicillin, which is like the frozen version,
right?
Which is, you know, like
well, that's kind of fun.
It was fun. It was delicious. Yeah, yeah. You know, like I don't, yeah. you know, that was great. And especially, you know, to be able to sip a frozen penicillin in the middle of a Vegas casino.
Well, you know, he was able to make that drink popular because it wasn't drowned out by 20 other new drinks on the menu.
Oh, right.
You know, that was the right. new cocktail that they made
right.
At
right.
When he was at Milk and Honey. That was, right. you know, that was – so everybody knew to ask for that.
Right.
There weren't like – it was – always there. It wasn't like we'll every season, you know, four times a year, we're changing all of our cocktails.
And he could tweak it and he could give it
exactly.
the love that
he could develop it.
He could nurture it until the recipe was right.
Yeah.
And if it, you know, it never worked, then scrap it and then, you know, create another.
Another one. Right. But and try to spend more time on each individual drink.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe don't give every bartender four spaces on the menu, which is what a lot of bars do these days. You know, be a little stricter about that.
And it's been kind of interesting to see the feedback from your story about all these people kind of weighing in.
Yeah.
Some very angry, right? That, you know, they can't find drinks that they. I mean, it definitely touched a nerve.
It touched a nerve. I mean, there were a few people said, "Well, I really like the all new drinks menus," but there were very few.
Yeah,
so many people were like, "Hell yes, you know, thank you, preach it, brother."
Or like even bar owners saying, "You know what? Like, I appreciate you saying that because we're not sure what to do."
Yeah,
like we don't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, part of it's like, are people demanding this? Or are they not demanding it? You know, and I think a lot of people, you know,
I think they don't even realize that people are demanding it.
Right. No, but I mean, demanding new drinks.
Like yeah.
Some of them
oh, yeah.
Like, do we have, I mean, this seems to be the thing to do. Like,
right.
do we have to have a menu of new drinks or can we just, can it be classics? And,
but I mean, it can't be lazy classics is the thing. Is if you're doing classics, you have to treat every one of those drinks on your menu with love.
Right.
If you're making a whiskey sour, you have to make the best goddamn whiskey sour, you know?
And
you have to really.
And that's where the creativity comes.
It does.
Where even Sasha, you know, we always, people sort of dismiss his list because it was all classics, but he had reinvented all of those classics for the modern palate. I mean,
he really worked on them.
Right. I mean, as we all know, like pulling recipes from a 150-year-old book doesn't always work out well because
sometimes we don't understand what their ingredients were
or their measurements.
Exactly.
I mean, so there's a lot of, you know, so even the classics, even not even from 150 years ago, but from 50 years ago or 60, things change, people's palates change, ingredients change, you know, so that. You know, Sasha and all of his talented bartenders that work there really spent a lot of time making sure that those drinks, even though they were the classics, that they tasted great.
They researched their brands for every drink. I mean, you know, they chose the appropriate thing that would make it taste best.
And maybe there was a twist, you know. Maybe there was a subtle twist that they found that, like, you know, people used to do X, but – doesn't exactly
work. You can find in if you look at a lot of old recipes, you could see that kind of tweaking going on too. You know, these were all popular drinks over many, many decades, and people tried different things. You can pick out, like, I had to help people develop a Ward 8 recipe in Boston, which was their cocktail.
Right.
And we found an absolutely smashing recipe that was one of the original ones. You know, there was some variation in that put a little bit of sherry in there.
Right.
And that was, you know.
Or I mean, you look at Jerry
back
Thomas,
in the day.
Right? There are, I think, 8 or 10 recipes for juleps. The Mink julep with whiskey is probably the 8th one or something, or 6th one. And there are all these other juleps, right? So, I mean, it's always been about creativity, but it's about
managing it, you know?
Right, or just investing the time and the energy to make those drinks taste good.
If a drink was popular for 80 years, there's a really good chance that there's a good way to make it, you know? Right.
And there's a reason why.
There's a reason why, exactly. I always believe that.
Yeah.
If the drink was popular, there was a reason why.
Right.
It did something well.
Yeah.
You just got to find that.
It checked some box that people like.
I mean, I get so tired. I see people periodically on social media putting out, all right, let's be honest, which classic cocktail do you really hate? Right. And it's like, oh, come on. You know, it's like, which one should be retired permanently? It's like, come on, just make it right. It'll be delicious.
Right.
You know, they're all fine. If you can't make a dry martini taste good, you know, because some people hate those apparently. Right. It's like you're not really bartending there. You're not, you know.
No matter who you are, you're not going to like everything. I mean,
yeah.
It's just how it is.
But at least you should be able to make it taste good for your customers.
Right. You can appreciate it, right?
Yeah, you can respect it.
Right.
You know, even if you don't like it, you can respect it. You can make it properly in a way that's delicious for people who like it.
And, you know, we talk a lot about Dale DeGroff. I remember talking about this years ago. And he said, you know, look, it's sometimes I have to make drinks with products that, you know, I don't love.
Yeah.
I just consider that a bigger challenge.
Yeah.
That I actually like that because I step up to the challenge to try to make something taste good out of stuff that, like,
that I'm
drink.
Yeah.
So, and he's like, and when I do it, I feel really proud. Like that's, you know, that's a great exercise for
me. It really is.
That's hard to take stuff that you don't love and make it into something that tastes
that other people do love.
Right.
I mean, who's drinking these drinks? You know, it's your customers.
Right.
If you're a bartender, you better not be drinking them all.
Right. And traditionally, you know, you get a lot of restaurants, you know, they'd be sitting on X number of cases of some ingredient that they had to move that maybe they bought for a discount or nobody drank. And it's like, okay, like how do we come up with something, you know, the Bananas Foster's kind of thing. Like how do we, you know, the Commander's Palace.
Well, that's what gave us the Moscow Mule is I've got all this ginger beer and nobody wants ginger beer.
Right.
I've got all this vodka. Nobody wants vodka.
Let's be friends.
Let's be friends.
And my cousin makes, you know.
Copper cups that nobody wants.
Right. Like this is the best part, you know.
That's it though.
The sum is greater than its parts.
Yeah, you know? That's.
And that's fine too, you know, that necessity is the mother of invention. But again, like a lot of time went into perfecting those things.
Yeah, they worked on them.
And it worked. And it's just a little bit of alchemy too. Mm-hmm. So, looking forward to seeing more new drinks out there, hopefully balanced on menus with classics. And
I'm looking forward to drinking some more Jack Roses and Sidecars and Rob Roy's.
And if you don't agree, you know where you can find a sanctuary.
Yeah. And the occasional new drink.
Or at bars, so don't be shy. And cheers.
Cheers.
Dave and I encourage you to drink responsibly always.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.